The second section of A Furnace, The Return. Whatever breaks from stasis, radiance, or dark impending, and slides directly and fast on its way, twisting aspect in the torsions of the flow, this way and that, then suddenly over, through a single glance of another force touching it or bursting out of its sidelong. Doing so fetches the timeless flux that cannot help but practice materialization, the coming into sense, to the guesswork of the senses, the way in cold air ice crystals guessed at come densely falling from where they were not. And it fetches timeless identities riding in the flux with no determined form, cast out of the bodies that once they were, or out of the brains that bore them, but trapped into water drops, windows they glanced through, or had their images detained by and reflected, or into whose molten glass the coloured oxides burned their qualities. Like dark-finned fish embedded in ice, they had life. Like dark-finned fish embedded in ice, they have life in them that can be revived. There is ancient, and there is seeming ancient, new and seeming new. Venerable cancer, old as the race, but so made as to bear nothing but urgencies. There is persuading the world's layers apart with means that perpetually alter and annex, and show by the day what they can. But still, with hardly a change to it, the other dream or intention of encoding something perennial and entering nature thereby. The mask for that comes in its own best time, but in my place. Blade-like and eternal, clear, the entry into nature is depicted by the vanishing of a gentleman in black and in portraiture, being maybe a Dr. John Dee, or Dunn, or Hofmannsthal's Lord Chandos, he having lightly walked through a door in the air among the tall buildings of the Northern Aluminium Company, and become inseparable from all other things, no longer capable of being imagined apart from them, nor yet of being forgotten in his identity. All of that is enacted at the far top of the field I was born in. Long slope of scrub, then pasture, still blank on the map 300 years after the walkings of all such gentlemen. Out of the air? Then suddenly printed across with this century, new, a single passage of the roller, dealing out streets of terraces, that map-like ratchet strips their gables gazing in ranks above the gardens, at a factory sports ground, a water tower for steam cranes, more worksheds, and, hulking along the bank for a sunset peristyle, the long, dark, tunnel-top roof of a football stadium. All so mild, so late in that particular change, still seeming new. Some of it, my streets, Kentish Road, Belmont, Paddington, Malvern, just now caught up and lacquered as urban renewal, halted in the act of tilting to break up and follow the foundries out and the stamping mills, the heavy stuff. Short lives, all of them. But still, through that place, to enter nature, it was possible, it was imperative, something always coming out, back against the flow, against the drive to be in, close to the radio, the school, the government's wars. The sunlight, old and still, heavy on dry garden soil, and nameless mouths, events without histories, voices, animist, polytheist, metaphoric, coming through. The sense of another world, not past but primordial, everything in it simultaneous, and moving every way but forward. massive in the sunlight, the old woman, dressed almost all in black, sitting out on a low backyard wall, rough hands splayed on her sacking apron, with a purse full of change in the pocket, black headscarf tight across the brow, black cardigan and rough skirt, thick stockings, black shoes worn down. This peasant is English city-born. It's the last quarter of the 20th century, up an entryway in Perry Bar, Birmingham, and there's mint sprouting in an old chimney pot. No imaginable beginning to her epoch, and she's ignored its end. Timeless identities, seeming long, like the one they called Achilles, or short, like William Fisher, aged 10 years, occupation, jeweller, living in 1861 down Great King Street, in a household headed by his grandmother, my ancestress, Anne Mason, 57, widow, occupation, mangler, come in from Haunton, back of Edge Hill, where the Masons were quarrying for Christminster. These identities, recorded by authority to be miniaturized, to be traceable, however small, to be material, to have status in the record, to have the rest, the unwritten, even more easily scrapped. Mind and language, and mind out of language again, and language again and forever, fall slack and pat by defective nature into antinomies, unless thrown, and again and repeatedly thrown, to break down the devil, his spirit, to pull down the devil, his grammar school, wherein the brain submits to be cloven, up, sideways and down, in all of its pathways, where to convert one term to its antithesis requires that there be devised an agent with authority. And they're in. That's it. Who shall own death? Spoken for, and Lazarus the test case. Only Almighty God could work that trick. Except that the dead have gone away to God through portals sculpted in brass to deter. Horrific. The signs of it, passably offensive in a cat or a herring, in a man are made out unthinkably appalling. Vide M. Valdemar's selfless demonstration, drawn back and forth, triumphantly racked in a passage without extent, province of the agent, between antithesis and thesis. Sail and lease back, perennial wheeze, in the body's exuberance steal it, whatever it is, sell it back again, buy it in cheap, put it out to rent. If it's freedom graciously granted, asking in return no more than war service, wage labour, taxes, custodial schooling, a stitched-up franchise, trade town futures for fields, railroad food in, sell it on the streets. And as if it were a military installation, specialise and classify and hide the life of the dead. Under that thunderous humbug, they've been persistently coming and going by way of the pass and return valve between the worlds. Not strenuous, ghosts innocent of time, none the worse for their adventure, nor any better. That you are dead turns in the dark of your spiral, comes close in the first hours after birth, recedes and recurs often. Nobody needs cellular death. The ghosts, grown children, mill all day in the public search office, burrowing out names for their own bodies, finding characters with certificates, but no stories. Genetic behaviour, scrabbling, feeling back across the spade cut for something, the backflow of the genes, forward compulsion, suddenly showing broken, leaking out, distressed. They come anyway, to the trench, the dead in their surprise, taking whatever form they can to push across. They've no news. They infest the brickwork, Kentish Road, almost as soon as it's run up out in the field, gets propelled to the trench, the soot still fresh on it. And the first few dozen faces take the impress, promiscuously with door and window arches. Birmingham voices in the entryways lay the law down. My surprise stares into the walls.